Crossing the Long Island Sound in dense fog, just before midnight on June 11, 1880, the passengers and crew of the steamship Stonington found themselves enveloped in impenetrable blackness. They could feel the swell of the sea below them, hear the rhythmic churning of the ship's massive wooden panel wheels, and sense the engine's steady drumming deep in its belly. At regular intervals, the blast of the foghorn cut through the night, but the sound went unanswered. No lights appeared on the horizon. No ship returned to their call. They seemed utterly alone. Most passengers had long since retired to the warmth of their cabins or the saloon, but one man remained on deck, peering into the soupy fog that rendered everything beyond his pale hands invisible. Charles Guiteau was an unremarkable figure. 5'7", narrow-shouldered, his face sharp and small, his jacket threadbare. He had failed at nearly every venture in his life, from practicing law to preaching in the ministry to dabbling in free-love communes. He had been jailed, abandoned by his wife, and shunned by his family, who considered him insane. Yet in Guiteau's mind, he was a man of destiny, a figure of great promise. He envisioned a future filled with glory, even as his past was littered with humiliation. Just days earlier, Guiteau had been in Boston when news of the Republican Party's chaotic presidential convention reached him. Against all odds, James Garfield, an eloquent congressman from Ohio, had emerged victorious over a field of political heavyweights, including former President Ulysses S. Grant. For Guiteau, Garfield's meteoric rise was a source of inspiration. Like Garfield, Guiteau had started with little in life. But where Garfield had achieved greatness, Guiteau had met only failure. Now, determined to attach himself to the campaign, he packed his few belongings and set off for New York, convinced that his moment had finally arrived. But destiny had other plans that night. Out of the fog, a 253-foot steamship materialized without warning. Before Guiteau or anyone else aboard the Stonington could react, the two vessels collided head-on with a deafening crash. The force of the impact tore away the starboard wheelhouse of the oncoming ship, the Narragansett, and chaos erupted. On board the Narragansett, passengers were plunged into darkness as rushing waters and scalding steam engulfed the decks. Some staterooms were ripped away entirely, and one man, thrown from his bunk, found himself flailing in the icy waters of the Sound. As panic spread, the situation worsened. The Narragansett's boiler, damaged in the collision, exploded with a thunderous roar. Flames erupted across the well-oiled decks, and within minutes, the fire consumed the entire ship, illuminating the night sky. Passengers, desperate to escape, threw themselves overboard, clutching children in their arms or leaping alone into the freezing water. From the deck of the Stonington, Guiteau and the others could only watch in horror as the fiery spectacle unfolded. The screams of the dying filled the air, cries for help that grew fainter as the flames burned through the ship's hull and it sank beneath the waves. The crew of the Stonington, ill-prepared for such a disaster, scrambled to lower lifeboats. For hours, they groped through the darkness, searching for survivors by sound alone, pulling people from the water by their arms, legs, or even their hair. But many had already succumbed to the cold or drowned, their cries fading into the distance. By the time the Stonington limped into port in Connecticut early on the morning of June 12th, the full scale of the tragedy had come into focus. 27 people from the Narragansett had died, some burned, others drowned. Survivors staggered onto the pier, many hysterical, their skin shredded by fire. Their clothes burned away. Among the wreckage, parents frantically searched for missing children. Crew members solemnly wrapped bodies in sailcloth and laid them on the rocks near the shore. For the stunned survivors, merely being alive felt like a miracle. But for Guiteau, it was something more. He didn't see himself as lucky. He saw himself as chosen. As he stepped off a rescue vessel, leaving behind the burned-out remains of the Narragansett, he felt certain that he had been spared for a divine purpose. Disappearing into the crowd, Charles Guiteau dedicated himself to what he now saw as his God-given mission, one that would, in his mind, forever alter the course of history.